racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back about almost 10 minutes into hour three, and have had two extensive conversations this morning. Alan Foreman starting us, and then Sid Fernando, and we can't come to Baltimore and not talk to Blue. He's out at Timonium. Leon Blushewicz joins us. He's got another good-looking two-year-old in training that's gone through the sale, and I understand breezed very nicely yesterday. Blue, good morning.
Good morning. 21-4. They got down 22. My clock says 21-4. She's out of a full sister, the Minor Secret. Minor Secret, so cold front, and so that horse ran, and so the horse that I made a big score with, Special Lady, at Newcastle at 51.
Oh yeah.
And then she's got another horse called Laffy that's still winning mile and a half. This filly is the best filly in the sale because she wants to run alone.
Let me pull up.
And I'm just coming. Listen, I'm just coming out of. I just bought 2 pounds of crab meat. Maryland Jumbo Lump, $47.95 a pound.
Yeah.
I'm walking out of the place right now.
Make sure nobody doesn't knock you off. That's like bullion.
No, I made enough money on them last week. I bet out on him.
We'll get to that in a minute. Let me get the hip number first things
hip
first.
Hip number one.
No, you're going through the sale first?
Yep.
Does that bother you at all? I mean, sometimes...
Well, it bothers everybody. Listen, as good-looking as Philly she is, she's not big, she's not small, but she's power-packed. She's a future star. I know the whole family. I developed the whole family. I told everybody when Baffert bought that horse for $1.1 million, he'll never break his fucking maiden. They gave $1.1 million. I said he won't break his fucking maiden. But they gave $1.1 million for him.
This is the latest.
It's an old story. Listen,
yeah.
It's an old story. One of the greatest philosophers in the world. Behind every fortune, there's an act of larceny. You know who said that? The greatest guy in France. What was his name? Versailles, or whatever his name was. Somebody just robbed all of us. Listen, I want to commend you on your expose that you did on Baffert. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. You took a stand. You got to take a stand. Against these guys. All these guys got 50 and 200 horses. They're doing things. I ain't going to mention no names. They're doing things. That's why they win so much. They ought to be ashamed of themselves.
That's the part. I mean, I was going to, as part of the visit too. I mean, I wanted you to, you've seen it all, Blue. I mean, at every level, from meat and potatoes.
I'm gonna tell you a lot of things. Number
yeah,
one,
I mean, ham and egg.
Number one, I'm going to tell you a lot of things because I'm 90 years old. I'll never run out of money. I'm running out of fucking time, brother. Time. Time is the essence. Time. It's just like that. Guy said, I got it through the grapevine. I knew something happened through the grapevine 2 days ago. A party called me from San Anita. So that bullshit that he's giving on the air about the sale, that's all bullshit. Plain ordinary fucking bullshit. That's where that is, bullshit. If he was a fucking man, he'd come up and prove it and tell him that he did it. It's all bullshit. Every time it's an infection, it somebody touched a horse or did something. It's all bullshit. But anyway, getting back to the main subject. You call me every year. I love to hear your voice and everything. But how can they keep Turner out of the Hall of Fame? how can you keep Turner, a Triple Crown winner that gave us all these signs, Tappet and other, and the rest of the line that he gave us, and they're keeping that guy out of the Hall of Fame. And they're putting guys in the Hall of Fame, can't spell fucking horse. I wouldn't give him a horse to train.
Yeah, you know, there's. I'm glad you brought. I'm actually on a couple of levels. I'm glad you mentioned this, and you have over the years voiced, you know, your frustration that Billy Turner has not, you know, not gotten in, and I haven't even, I'm not sure that the veterans group has considered him, and I, more importantly, I want to check on how he's doing. Right?
Let me tell you something. The veterans group, listen, I'm going to tell you something. Andrew Byer was on your show the other day. He ought to be ashamed of himself to say he graduated from Harvard. He sounded like a fucking imbecile. Like an imbecile. He said Baffert wouldn't do that. Choice said that because he cashed the ticket. That's why. He sounded like an imbecile. And these people that tell you, listen, I listen to your show every day. And a certain party called you and told you, said, you can't bleed blue, you can only bleed half. Well, he's a fucking liar. But there's one thing I never did is tell a fucking lie. Because to me, it's fighting fucking words. I'll fight any cocksucker over that.
Somebody warned me that you were going to be on the muscle today.
I am, because listen, it's our Super Bowl. It's our Super Bowl. You know what this means? The people are trying to stop this game anyway. You only know a little bit about this game. I've been in this game 59 years, and I never did nothing to hurt it. I yep. tapped three or four horses my whole life, and I never tapped a horse's hocks. Never.
Yeah.
It's all yep. bullshit these guys are coming on. Listen, this game will go on without all these big guys, without Pletcher and Baffert and Chad Brown. The game will go on and be better. The jockey clubs worried about, too many horses to be bred. They ought to worry about getting too many stalls to everybody. Years ago, our best racing was 60s, 70s, and 80s. Everybody got 42 stalls, and we had the Buff Panthers, we had the Dr. Favors, we had the great horses. Seattle Slew, we got all the great horses now. Now what do you get? They tap them every time, even before they run, even if they're sound. These big outfits are tapping these horses. And they don't tell the fucking owners nothing either, because it's all included in the fucking bill. I know a lot of things in this fucking game that you wouldn't. And listen, this boy Turner, he broke that horse. He did everything to that horse. That was a hands-on horse. And he didn't run with no license or nothing.
Yeah.
How could you keep a guy like him out of the Hall of Fame?
We're going to check. We want to check on. I'm glad you. I'm really glad, Blue, you mentioned.
Check. Listen, just like, I mean, they talk about horse. I heard you finally mention a horse. One of the greatest horses I mentioned. I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame. Mongo.
Yeah.
One of the greatest horses I've ever seen. I was around that horse. He beat Kelso on the dirt and on the dirt. He beat some of the greatest horses in the fucking world. Never been he beat. He beat the Axe the Second. Johnny Rod says was the greatest horse he ever rode. He beat some of the greatest horses he ever seen. As a three-year-old, he beat older horses with the United Nations.
You know, there's a picture. I'll show it to you. I'm coming out to Timonium after the show. I'll show it to you later. I found a wonderful, you mentioned like a horse like Mongo. I put up a picture on Facebook this morning with Harry Trotzik. And, you know, there's a Hall of Famer nobody ever talks about. And you look at his horses like a Hasty Road. And, you know, I keep
Hasty
Blue.
That's why I bought Snowplow. That's why I bought Snowplow.
There you go. There you go.
That's why I brought him. And listen, there's another thing that happened to Leon Bluzowicz. There's my horse, I had Snowplow. She broke her maiden in New York and out of the 14th or 15th post position, going 7/8 a mile. I come back, I run into Salima, she carries 121, she wins. So Woody tells me, he says, you got to give me 7 pounds worth of Larita. I come back and I won the Demoiselle. I didn't even get the Eclipse Award. They gave it to Calumet Farms. It was all rigged. All the sports writers from the Racing Forum and on those other papers that was there, the Morning Telegram, they all voted for Calumet Farms. And as I went to Distant Races, and I got checked because it was Leon Blutowicz against Calumet Farms. It's like these papers now, these guys, there's no more Joe Hershey's around, write columns and tell it like it is. All they ever tell you is, this guy's the Hall of Fame trainer, this guy's the Hall of Fame trainer. Give me a fucking break. Anybody could be a Hall of Fame trainer, give him 150, 200 horses, the best bred horses money can buy. Money can buy. How can you not go wrong? And they still can't win fucking derbies. There was 12 horses in the Derby that you couldn't win. They couldn't win.
Yeah.
Because they're not trained up. And then I want to specify, there's 5 horses that win the Derby from the East Coast, never another. Zito had 2 Derby winners, never win another race. Todd Pletcher had 2 Derby winners, they never win another race. Shug McGee had a Derby horse, never win another race. Tell me why. Give me that fucking answer. I try to ask the vets and anybody. Nobody can answer that. But I can answer it because they got no fucking bottom under them. No bottom. And that's why Baffert wins those races. He's got bottom under those horses. He's got bottom under those horses.
You're not going to get that. I won't argue that.
I commend you. I commend you on the things you say on the radio, especially when you say these guys deceive the way the man trains, and none of them won't follow the suit. He learned from Whittingham and Barrera. But these guys, they're too fucking hard. They're making too much money. That's what it is. They make $2,000 a day, these big-time trainers, just by opening the fucking door. They're making $10 a day off of every horse. They got 200 horses. So that's $2,000 a fucking day they make. They don't have to fucking gamble. The game will come back if they get some racing secretaries. You get an efficiency expert, take them to Belmont, they throw everybody out of that fucking place. How can you give people 150 stalls and 200 fucking stalls? Come on.
Well, we've talked about this before, Blue. The problem, Leon Blutowicz with us, everybody, if you haven't figured it out by now, that problem, it can't even be solved anymore because of the training centers. Even if they were to cut back and limit everybody to, let's say, to 2 sheds and 60 ahead, let's say 60, it wouldn't matter because you got all these horses on private training centers.
Yeah, but how many people want to be at a private training center? Listen, if you're paying $150 a day, you want to be at a private center or you want to be at the fucking races? You want to go through all that at the Hall of Fame, worry about how the horse ships there and everything, or you want to be at the fucking races with your horse? You want to be at the races.
I agree.
You don't want to be some private center that you got to carry 4 or 5 hours to get to another track. That's working against yourself. You have the track. You can school them there. They see the surroundings.
Yeah.
But anyway, never going to change. They're never going to change because they're making plenty of money. Secretaries, they give themselves bonuses every year for saving. The horsemen are paying, like Churchill, they make $189 million on one day, but they never tell the horsemen what they get from NBC for televising rights. We never see it in the paper. You can Google, and Google won't give you the answer what they make off of NBC. The cheap sons of bitches ought to be on $10 million. $10 million to raise.
A couple of friends are listening of yours, and they're saying you need to relax. You know, you're an octogenarian. Well, I don't even know after you're an octogenarian, what happens when you become 90?
Hey, who cares? Who cares? What the fuck? Ain't nobody gonna miss me.
That's not true. You're
Let me tell you something.
You're a treasure.
Go look up my record. When I bet my fucking money, I get the money. There's no living human can train one horse better than me. I don't give a fuck if it's backwards, left, or any of them. And they fucking know it. When I come in there against Woody, you know what Woody used to say? That Bulldog bastard, I'm scared of him. He was always scared of me when I brought a first-time starter in there, because I win. Because I know what the fuck I'm doing.
You know what? You know what's not fair? Blue, there's one thing, and I think it's probably, God, it'd be a really difficult to accrue, but, you know, the Equibase statistics, when you look up, you know, when you look up numbers, it only goes back to 1974. So, you know, what about somebody like you who's still technically active? And how many races did you win from the start of your career until 1974?
Most of my races are 70 of them is over in stakes. The rest of them, mostly in my allowances, because I didn't fuck with no claiming horses. I tell them, get the hell out of here. I get rid of them because there's no money. The only one to make the money there is the jocks and the veterinarians. So most of my wins are wins and allowance when it's hard knocking horses I had. And most of them, I bought them cheap or I raised them. How many stake horses do you think I raised? Grade one stake, four of them. How many people in Kentucky can tell you that? Four of them.
Well, you know,
one of them was the champion, Ambassador Luck. I trained her when she was running for 2,500, and Buzz Belair owned her, and he bred her to more. So I said, "That ain't the breeding. You got to breed her to Diplomat Way. You got to get the Nazrula blood in her, because she was by Nantella, first horse, Ambassador Luck. He's the champion." Champion Philly as a 4-year-old.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, too, because when we're in Kentucky, you know, we always get a chance to talk to Don Winfrey. And Don, you know, and in fact, every year at Keeneland, when you have the developers, you know, that start these horses and then sell them, and you did plenty of that yourself.
Sold Snowplow for $1.6 million, and the Murdy brothers were trying to buy it for $800,000. They thought I was some fucking yokel. So my partner, Peskov, he said, "What are you going to?" I said, "I'm going to take her to $1.2 million." He said, "How are you going to pay me?" I said, "You borrowed $500,000 on her papers. You didn't tell me about it. I'll pay you. Don't worry about it." I got $1.6 million for both the Hunt Barter, and our first foal was a stakes horse, Crown. And I had the Gallimore people. I had the Gallimore. It was a state horse I produced. And Willow on the Move, I bred her to a cert. They all thought I
That's
was
right.
crazy.
Willow on the Move.
I should have won a media grade. I got beat out. I don't even want to get into that. Spectacular Love. I bred that horse. He was out of Gallimore. A grade one winner. And the horse that Bond had was out of my mare that I bred. The Easy Goalie had one grade one winner, the horse that I bred.
Oh, it was Barons?
What's that?
Barons?
No, it wasn't Baron. No, it was the other horse. He went to Travers, and he won the other big race for older horses, the Whitney.
Oh, my God. Will's Way.
I bred that horse.
I didn't. You're amazing. You never. As long as we know you, and as many conversations as we've had like this, there probably hasn't been one like this exactly. But you've never mentioned that you bred Will's Way.
Well, yeah, I bred Will's Way, Spectacular Love, Willow on the Move. And Ambassador Luck, I started all those families. I started them from nothing. I started them. Like I told people 3 years ago about American Pharoah will be one of the fucking greatest. He'll be one of the greatest broodmare sires that ever lived. Mark it in your book. Mark it in your fucking book. When it comes to breeding, they got to get up fucking 3 o'clock in the morning and tell me about breeding. Get up 3 o'clock in the morning. I was doing it years of fucking go. I read all about Contagio up and down.
Blue, gotta ask. back to the baby for a minute, the 2 year old. What's coming up behind this Mind Shaft filly? Does she have two more on the ground?
Yeah, she's on the ground, but I don't know. I mean, he's going to sell her.
No. I mean, know. Babies. Is there a yearling and a weanling?
No. There isn't. No. I mean, she had a weanling. I mean, she had a pulled by the Arrogant. She had Arrogant. They died, and the mare died. Mine and Sheik would die. They both died a day apart.
Oh gosh, brutal.
Brutal. I sold that whole family. I sold that mare to Farris for $250 and bought her back for $50,000. She sold Cold Front. She sold that Holy, the horse of the second and the Holy Bull that Mark Cassie had. I started that whole family. I started four big families in the book. Gallimore. Started some great families in the book with nothing, with zero. I love the game. I love the game. I could tell you stories, but you ain't going to believe them. You ain't going to believe them. I'll tell you a fucking story. but I'm going to tell you anyway. Secretary was on fucking... He was on steroids. And I know that for a fact because I was giving horses steroids every 21 days, and he was giving them every 10 days to him and Reva Ridge.
I always avoid the secretary of conversation with you because we know not to go there. Let's do this.
Seattle flew with a druggie. If they had a match regime with a druggie, ain't no onions ever going to beat Seattle Slew. Worked 10 in the fucking mornings, like nothing. One of the greatest horses that ever fucking lived. And he proved it in the sire. He's a sire of size, broodmare of size, and everything.
Yep. We touch on it very often.
Sure, they were using equipoise on both those horses every 10 days. I know the vet was 3 miles every 21 days. He told me about it.
Blue, let's round it out here and let's get around the turn. Everybody,
there's well, I'm rooting for Lucas the Source.
There you go.
Because I know the horse wants to run all day. He'll run a mile and a half, that horse. He's bred to run all day. Just like that filly. Nobody, if anybody don't buy that filly, they don't want a real good filly. If they go to the sales and buy that filly, she galloped out 34.
Nice.
Tremendous filly. Got a tremendous hind leg on her. Nice filly. And she wants to go a distance of ground. She's no sprinter. Because I know the whole family. I started Woodlander. He was by Forestry. And he wasn't going a mile and a quarter. So that tells you about my family.
Nice. Well, the sale, and we'll obviously do a lot more on the sale. But 17th, so first horse through the ring. Hip number one.
Everybody said it's bad, but I think it'll be all right because people see what she's a nice looking filly. She scopes good and she x-rayed out fine. She's everything's good. I think she'll bring what the man wants. I don't know what she's going to bring. I can't say how the market is because I know the market's got to be hurt by this scandal. I know it's got to be hurt.
Yeah.
I know it's got to hurt something. It's got to hurt something because it sure hurt me. I got people coming to me and says, well, I told you the game is fixed. The game ain't fixed. It's one individual.
Yeah. Blue, got to do this. You got to run it down because we've got some people actually who said that they've lost the recipe. It's crab cake time, Blue's crab cakes, and they're served, of course. No. Downtown on Calvert at the Prime Rib. So lay it out for everybody.
Listen, when I come there, when you're at the sales, I don't know when you're, I'll bring the thing where I finish second against 3,000 people, you know, with my recipe. I finish second. They gave me a plate for a plat, whatever you want to call it. Everybody. Listen, I just bought 2 pounds. It cost me almost $100 for an homemade crab cakes. It's very easy. All you got to do is take the club crackers, take all of them but four, crush them up with your hand, take one egg, beat it up real good, take a real good spoonful of Hellman's mayonnaise, and then take a half a spoonful of the tangy mustard.
Gouldens.
And whip it Gouldens. And you rip it around and pour it in and just fluff it up and just pat them gently and put them in the fridge there so they set up. And then you take them in a frying pan that don't stick and you cook the bottom of it. And the rest of them, you put them in a bowl and let them roll the top of them. And then you got yourself a nice crab cake.
I'm going to let me run it down for everybody again.
I was at the prime rib because I told you and I would take it once we get all our shots and everything.
Yeah.
And the place, it's a garbage place now, garbage. Since they murdered Buzz or whatever they did to him, I know he didn't die. But anyway, the crab cakes, the guy said, it's still your recipe. I said, hey, my recipe. It wasn't worth a quarter.
No, don't say that. Oh, my God.
Seriously, wow. I'm telling you now. The place was like a morgue. They don't have the guys that dressed up. Look, I took Joe Hirsch in there years ago. Joe Hirsch and Buzz were good friends. He'd come in there all the time. All the big people. Lenny Hale would come in there with a party of 14, 15 people. You don't want to go on a party in there now. You're in there for a surprise. I went there.
I hate to hear that, Blue.
Yeah, so to me, listen, the guy's been my friend since 1963. I love the guy. I must have won 30 stakes for him. I got him out of the claiming business and got him to breed that mare. The first mare when I bred, she was a half. I'll never forget it. And Baja D'Or was out of that mare. They tried. And Baja D'Or was sold her to a Cuban trader. It was a good friend of Las Barreras. He did real good in Florida with him. He's a half brother to a master of luck. As we put that Nashville
to master, yeah. Well, Blue, I'm heading. Are you going back to the sales grounds?
No, I'm heading back home with my crab meat. I'm going to fix up some crab cakes. I'm going to enjoy myself.
All right. Well, then I'll try to make arrangements. I want to see you before.
No disrespect to you. I love the game. I never did nothing to hurt the game. And I love your show. And I love the way you. I was so happy to see what you said this morning. I heard it before I went swimming. I went to the gym swimming. And when I heard that, you made my day. You made my day when you made that statement. The truth
I appreciate
is the
it.
Truth. Don't ever avoid the truth. The truth, you got to lay it out there, brother. You got to lay it out there.
You're right.
You did it.
You're right.
You did it. Don't ever be ashamed of that because we fought a Second World War to get the fucking truth. I had three brothers in the fucking armed services. That's what we fight for is the truth. Let it lay out there. You want to play, you got to fucking pay. You want to get all that publicity and fame, you got to pay when you do something fucking wrong.
You're right.
If there's any kind of fucking person, you stand up like a fucking man and take it like a man and tell people what he really done. I know
Blue.
What you've done.
I hear you. I appreciate it, Blue.
Right.
And I do. Let's try to get together before we head back Sunday.
Yeah, I want to show you that plaque. I mean, the count of my crab kicks because people think I'm bullshitting them. Because a certain guy come on your fucking radio and says he only sees the head for himself. If I was a young guy, that kicked his fucking ass. But I'm 90 years old. I can't.
All right,
I'm
pulling you up. You're running down the backside.
Yeah. Hey, listen. So, another thing I want to tell you: the fucking riders are overpaid. They ought to take a cut in fucking pay like everybody else in this business. They ought to take a cut fucking pay. Get the fucking exercise boys the fucking money in the grooves.
You're right. That's true. You're right. That's
exercise
a
boys
very
they,
fair.
They get shit.
$10 a day. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Blue.
All right, Steve. It's a pleasure, brother.
You've introduced yourself to a whole new, I can tell by reaction, you've introduced yourself to a whole new set of listeners that hadn't heard you before. So you got all new fans out there.
All right,
you got to stay around.
All right, young man.
The one and only, everybody, Leon Blushewicz. Blue, 90 years, his whole life in the game, and still selling two-year-olds and still making it happen one way or the other. So always tremendous. Oh, boy, he's unbelievable. Let me run down, for those that may have missed some of the specifics, Seth Merrow is going to join us next. I don't know how Seth follows this, but we'll get Seth in here. Here again, I'll put the recipe up again, at as we do every year. They're the best. When those, you know, I think I put some up just, last month. I made some for Tina. She'll say to me, you know, I think I want crab cakes tonight, and I run. I get jumbo lump, and I put them together. It is the easiest, simplest, and just they're just fabulous. It's 1 pound. Get 1 pound of jumbo lump crab meat, and as Blue has said right from day one, you know, don't skimp. Don't get flake. Get lump, particularly actually jumbo lump. You know, the you know, the quarter-sized, puffy, you know, back fin lump crab meat. So don't skimp on the quality. And right now, the price is gone up to about $40 a pound right now. I see that on stores. In fact, I was at Scatino's in Catonsville yesterday, and they're at $42 a pound. Blue said he paid $47 a pound today. So you take that and, you know, make sure, you know, you get any cartilage, any, you know, anything, kind of pick over it a little bit. Be very careful, though. You don't want to break up those lumps. You want them to stay in that, you know, that big, beautiful jumbo lump. A tablespoon of Goulden's brown mustard and 3 tablespoons of Hellman's, okay? And you're going to mix the mustard and mayo. You fold in 1 beaten egg. Beat an egg, fold it in to the mustard and mayo. Now, the crab is sitting by itself. You're going to take, you may have missed the club crackers. Club crackers, which used to be by Keebler. I don't know if anybody's noticed this, by the way, but Kellogg's bought Keebler. And I don't know if they're trying to, I don't know what they've done with the elves, if the elves are being held hostage, or I'd be concerned. But Kellogg's now seems to own Keebler. But you take the club cracker, and, you know, it's that sleeve. There's 3 sleeves in the box of club crackers. Blue takes out 4 of the crackers, and you just eat them, you know, yourself. I've been taking out, actually, a few more. I've been taking out like 6 of the crackers out of the sleeve. So with a little less filler. You break that up with your hands and put that over the crab meat, and very lightly, very gently, you mix up the pound of jumbo lump with that cracker crumb. Okay? Now you're going to take I'm forgetting one thing, and he forgot it too. The Montreal steak spice. Get Montreal steak spice and add as much as you know, you want to kind of coat the top, you know, shake it up and like 1 layer of Montreal steak spice. So it gives you a little garlic and you know, gives you a nice, you know, little salt and pepper and very nice. And then you fold in the mustard mayo egg blend, and again, you have to be very gentle. If you take a spatula, be very slow and just keep kind of folding it over in the bowl until, you know, the mustard mayo egg has been well distributed into the crab and crackers and spice mix. And you'll tell. You'll be able to tell when it's evenly distributed. And then you're going to take, I use an ice cream scoop as a measure. And, you know, obviously you got 1 pound of crab meat. So, you know, if you make 4, if you make 4 good-sized big ones, that's 1/4 pound each. I basically make 5, and once in a while I'll make 6 out of the pound. All right? And, you know, Blue, you can, you know, he talked about actually browning the bottom in butter and then finishing the top off under the broiler. I pretty much broil. I brown the top about 6-7 minutes, and then I flip them over for 3 or 4 minutes. And so, you know, it's pretty baked all the way, you know, evenly cooked. But you can brown them in a pan. You can bake them fully as an option, or broil. So any of the ways you like to cook them. You can deep fry them, actually. But I'd be very careful with that, because they're very ginger. For those that like to fry, you get the chance that it's going to fall apart. So broiling to me is the way to go. Seth Merrow, how do you like your crab cake?
Served to me in a restaurant.
Ah! Zing!
Yours are healthy, though. I thought you always stuck them in a frying pan.
You don't have to. You don't have to.
I like that. Yours are healthier. You stick them under the broiler. I like that. Sounds great. I'm hungry now. Sounds fabulous. And you got to toss out some kind of recipe for the. Is it remoulade? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Remoulade is correct. I actually just do I do cocktail sauce and tartar sauce.
Oh, so you don't use the remoulade.
I don't, you know, a remoulade is nice. I mean, remoulade's
right.
Nice.
Yeah. I could see a little tartar sauce. That works. Yeah.
I like tartar and cocktail.
Yeah, that's fine. And I will say, I'm putting this once again on the Steve Bick at the Races Seth Merrow resume as yet another. I am the maiden claimer after the stakes race. I'm the getaway cat. There have been a few of these where I am coming on thinking, how am I following that? And today is another one of those days I can put on the resume.
You know, Blue has been a regular on Preakness Week. I bet you 10 years. And there have been... There's always a topic that'll fire him up. Usually it's something like, you know, like Billy Turner not being in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, the past 72 hours was a little bit more fodder. But listen, you be a guy like that that's been around the game for 70 years, literally 70 years.
Well, you said you were getting feedback from people, and it's nice to introduce people, because, yeah, people like you and I that have been around, the name is certainly familiar. He's been a fun character in the game for a long time and has had great horses throughout the career. People can go look up his resume, certainly, but, yeah, it was fun to hear.
Leon Belushewitz, everybody, and I'll put up I've got some classic pictures of Leon from right here at Pimlico. By the way, speaking of a 90-year career, a 70-year career for Blue, I do want to mention, I don't know if you saw, I fell asleep like at 7:15 last night, and then I woke up at 10:30, which was predictable, and I knew I was going to end up for a couple of hours. When I woke up at 10:30, and I went to go check some ball scores, I saw word that Norman Lloyd had passed away at 106, and his career parallels Blue's 90-year career in film, television, and the theater. And for those that aren't familiar with Norman Lloyd, Dr. Daniel Auschlander on St. Elsewhere, which was one of my favorites. And 2 years ago, Seth, was with Hammer and with John Parada and Maggie, and we were having dinner in Brentwood. And Norman Lloyd was at the next table, and I got a chance to meet him. And I got to tell you, I was so thrilled that a guy that worked with Orson Welles in the Mercury Theater and John Houseman was a best man at one of Charlie Chaplin's weddings. Hitchcock, the major contributor and collaborator with Hitchcock. Just a brilliant guy and fascinating life. I put up last night, I put up the picture of me with him. Really something. So,
yeah, when you said career. The name, the first thing that came to mind was Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys, if people look it up online, he's one of those guys that was kind of a character actor in a number of television shows over the years, too. People will immediately recognize him.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he an amazing, amazing life, too, in general. And so I've in recent years, and because of racing being different parts of the country, I met two people in their later years. I also have a picture with Jim McDivitt and with James McDivitt, the astronaut that I met when I was out in Tucson for the symposium. And I went to pick up something to eat. There's a Chicago, there's a guy that has a pizza sandwich shop. He's from Chicago and really good Italian beef and Chicago specialties. And I was picking something up and there's an older gentleman ahead of me and he picked up a pizza and whatever. And the guy, I'm going to forget the guy's name now, the owner. And he said to me, he goes, you know who that was? I said, who? He said, Jim McDivitt. I said, you got to be kidding me. So I ran out to McDivitt to meet him and I had somebody take a picture of me with him. I mean, I was like, you know, because when guys our age, you know, the Mercury, Gemini, Apollo astronauts, I mean, they were the greatest heroes that, you know, that growing up that we all had.
Yeah, you as a kid, you had them all memorized.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at you. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. I pulled up the IMDb for Norman Lloyd, and I was in a movie with him.
You're kidding.
Age of Innocence, which they filmed in Troy. I was somebody walking down the street. I was background there, but yeah. So I was in a movie with Norman Lloyd.
Wow! Look at you. do you have a SAG card? Are you?
No. But I've been extra. Well, my claim to fame was I was Nicholson's double for a day on Ironweed.
That's right, on Ironweed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what else? Were you in? Were you in Billy Bathgate?
No, War of the Worlds, though.
Really?
Yeah, they shot that. I want to say Socrates or just below Albany. That scene where they all run onto the barge. But the crazy mass of people runs down the street. And the whole thing. And in the movie, you kind of see the monster machine behind them, but there's obviously nothing there. So the direction is kind of, well, look back, you're scared, there's something there, look back, run away from it. So that was kind of fun to do that and see it. But then I ran onto the barge, and for folks who didn't see the movie, there's a barge and they run on, but there's a barge that also takes cars across, so there's cars there. So I ran on, and I kept working my way up to Spielberg and the camera and everything were down at the end of the street. As a film school graduate, I wanted to get close. So I kept kind of running out of my assigned group, and we did it a few times. So by the end, I'm down on the barge, and I'm literally like 10 feet away from Spielberg and Tom Cruise. And I got stuck so far ahead that they just weren't moving those people back for the extra takes. There was like 10 of us, and they just said, hey, you just stay there. So for like an hour, I was just like 10 feet away from Spielberg and Tom Cruise as they completed the scene and watched the replays and stuff. It was, yeah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
All right, can you be spotted in the scene?
No, because it's so far away. That no, the Ironweed, I was actually his double and stand-in. Stand-in, you're just kind of going through the rehearsal, so Jack can be back in the trailer and doesn't have to worry while they focus the camera. But double, you're actually in one of the scenes, and there's a scene where Meryl Streep comes out of the bar and proceeds to vomit on the sidewalk. And the junk wagon with Jack Nicholson is a reflection in the window behind her. Yep, I'm the reflection.
This is so. Now I gotta go watch. What other James Kennedy? There was the trio, right, of books.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
I've read. I think I've read two of them. I haven't read all. I In fact, I've got one sitting in our guest bedroom downstairs. There's like five books that are sitting on a dresser, and
kind of Albany themed. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a trio. Leslie Knopf will answer. Leslie's been answering questions all morning. So she's very familiar with the Kennedy books. Seth, we've got about 5 minutes. You and I were together. You had me on TV on Saturday, and we were still kind of doing some post Derby stuff. And then 24 hours later. Not even, I mean, because Saturday afternoon and evening, everybody knew, that somebody was texting others about what was going on and what was going to drop on Sunday. What's your read? What have you been?
I got a couple of feelings. The big feeling is it's just so sad that it takes the air out of the room for the Triple Crown after really just a fabulous Oaks Derby weekend on track with great races and nice stories and whatnot. It just kind of took the air out of that. So that's sad. But then just the overarching, I wonder if the racing industry isn't shooting itself in the foot a little bit with the zero tolerance, because you have these rules in place on medications to A, protect the horse, and B, protect the integrity of the game. And if we're finding levels that don't affect the horse, are neither positive or negative for a horse, then I wonder if we're just shooting headlines out there that aren't, as I say, hurting the game unnecessarily. All of that said, that it may be this ointment they were putting on the horse just seems like, given what Bob Baffert has gone through in the last year, year and a half, it was just kind of sloppy that they were giving this ointment that had betamethasone in it to the horse in the days leading up to the race. So I can't really give him a pass given the current situation. But as I say, I wonder if the horse racing industry might step back and kind of reevaluate.
No, they're going in the other direction. They're going in the other direction.
You're right.
Yeah,
they are.
They're going in the other direction. What
is the point of these rules? The point is to protect the horse and protect the integrity.
Sure.
And if we're not really violating either of those, then I don't quite get it.
That's a fair point. And actually, it's funny. I brought this up yesterday with Dr. Scalay, and have discussed it in RMTC conversations and with Alan Foreman and with Eric Hamelbeck, et cetera. One of the disservices for years has been that anytime there's a headline about a positive, in fact, therapeutic med overages, that the instant read on it, they're cheating. No. It between the metabolism of the horse and between, just the way in which it cleared from a system. But in the meantime, the cumulative effect of that, those headlines, provides a backdrop for people to say, oh, look, they're all cheating. Everybody's cheating. And so I understand your point as to in fact, Alan this morning, did you hear him? You probably were on the air. He brought up an unbelievable thing that nobody has even mentioned, that if there had been a betamethasone overage like this, no matter how it got into the horse, it wouldn't have been a suspension at all in California. If this had happened in the Breeders' Cup Classic, there would have been a small fine, and that's it.
Well, just Baffert, the reason you're saying, one of his interviews earlier, he mentioned that, yeah. And that is certainly one of the problems again that we've talked about for years, the different rules in the different states. So that's hopefully something that gets addressed. Well, that is getting addressed, obviously, at this point. But to your point, over the past few days, I've read headlines that say horse doping, which is just
ridiculous.
It just allows the mainstream media to have a really bad read on the situation.
Yep, exactly. And then, of course, you got people that already have, an agenda. I hear some music. Seth, you got a quick Preakness thought?
I just started looking, but the two Chad horses I think are going to be a little bit interesting to me. I'm going to take a shot against the Derby winner. I mean, clearly the Derby winner always has the edge in the race, but I wasn't thrilled with the horse going into the Derby. So, and the two Chad horses, maybe I'll look at Todd. And Midnight Bourbon, maybe I'll throw in the mix as well, but I still have to sort it out a little bit.
Seth Merrill, everybody, and Capital OTB TV. And you got a play for today? Anything? Did you look at anything for Wednesday afternoon?
I pulled up an Indiana Grand idea, the fourth nice. Race at Indiana Grand, and I haven't heard. Hopefully they're still on the turf. Actually, I'm using this horse, turf or dirt. I thought the Mark Cassie horse was interesting. Fourth race at Indiana Grand, number four, Speeding. The two turf races were pretty good. I think getting back to the turf, Bullet Workout coming into this, I'll take a shot with Speeding against the 9-5 morning line favorite, Signify. I have it in the fourth at Indiana Grand, 4, 1, 6, and 5.
There you go. So a little push from Seth Merrow, 2 on Twitter. 4165 in the fourth in Indiana. Seth, thanks. We'll talk. You're probably going to call me from a Waffle House on Sunday at 10:30.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we'll check in. We'll check in.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, thank you, Leslie. William Kennedy, not James Kennedy. I don't know who. Not sure who I was thinking of with James Kennedy and. Beside Billy Phelan's Greatest Game and Ironweed, legs, and that's the one that's sitting in our guest bedroom. So if anybody's going to stay over, you can read Legs while you're visiting us. This was another intense 3 hours. I'm going to go over to Timonium and watch a little bit of Bree Show and catch up with Woodbury Payne, Curtis Beal Payne. I'm sure that means lunch with Ferris Allen and Woodbury and some of the other Virginia, Maryland types that'll be on hand. Thanks to Alan Foreman for a great segment and Sid, too, as well. And the one and only Leon Blushewicz, Seth Merrow. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.